We got you, brah. 6:12, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Hot, humid, chance for showers. Just miserably hot. And yesterday afternoon, it was just, you could just tell the atmosphere was just building up. It was just so hot and humid, something had to happen. Then it started pouring down rain, at least in Belchase. Don't know if you got anywhere you were yesterday. President Trump has signed the big bill into law. Justin Buechler joins us now, associate professor of political science at Case Western Reserve University, to talk about what happens now. How you doing, professor?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. So the president had a big signing ceremony. I'm looking at the picture here with Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise. A lot of Louisiana power there behind the president. I don't know if any of that's coming home to Louisiana or not, but tell me about this bill. What's in it?
So there's a lot in it. The first priority for putting together the legislation was that if you go back to 2017 and 2018, the Republicans put together what was then called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was a little bit more mundane. It was a big package of tax cuts. They claimed it was a tax reform, which was something else, but it had a lot of stuff in it, and a lot of it was set to expire, and if the Republicans didn't extend those tax cuts, a lot of people's taxes would have gone up. Mm-hmm. So the first priority for this legislation was to extend those tax cuts. And that was the biggest part of the legislation. So there were extensions of tax cuts. The rest of it was, to some degree, trying to figure out how to balance out the new tax cuts to minimize the increase in the deficit and the debt. And that's where some of the controversy came in, because we obviously have a very large national debt. We have some pretty big deficits every year. And anytime you cut any spending, there's going to be controversy. So, for example, the big controversies in spending cuts came from some of the cuts to Medicaid. There were cuts to various other programs, but we've got a bunch of tax cuts here, so the debt and the deficit are going up, and a few other spending cuts that are not quite as big as the tax cuts. So that's pretty much where things stand with the legislation.
So it says it's going to add $3.3 trillion to the federal deficit, that according to the Congressional Budget Office. But as of when, Professor, when does that happen?
Okay, so I'm not looking at that particular number right now. So there are going to be increases to the deficit every single year. I didn't have that particular number in front of me, so I don't want to comment on any particular number. But we're running deficits every year. We're running up the debt every year. But the important point here is that the Republicans used a procedure called budget reconciliation, which means that they are only allowed to increase the deficit for 10 years. This is just a technical provision for the procedure that they used. But they're going to be running deficits for a long time here. And that means that they're cutting taxes, but the spending cuts are smaller than the tax cuts. We're running some really big deficits here. That's the basic point.
So the politics of this, well, what happens from here? What does the legislature take on now, or the Congress? Are they in research and recess until August? Because I know it's pretty, summertime can be pretty slow around Washington, D.C. And then what happens, I guess, is there a political vacuum here? Tell me what goes on from here.
Okay, so legislatively, there is very little that can happen now. And the basic reason is that the Senate is relatively closely divided. It's not as closely divided as the House. In the House, Mike Johnson is working with a razor-thin majority. He can only lose a vote or two. But the thing is, he can pretty much whip the Republican Party into line on nearly anything. The House has relatively strict party discipline. The real issue for the Republicans in the Senate for John Thune is the filibuster. What the Senate can do is they can confirm judges, they can confirm executive branch appointments, but the filibuster will prevent nearly any legislation from passing. They're not going to get rid of the legislative filibuster. They were able to pass the budget reconciliation bill because, according to the budget reconciliation rules, debate automatically cuts off after a period of time. But you can only use budget reconciliation on certain kinds of bills and a certain number of times. That being done, there's really not much that the Republicans can do at this point anymore, which means that anything that the Republicans were to try to do at this point, they couldn't use budget reconciliation anymore, which means anything they attempted would be subject to the filibuster. The Democrats are not going to go along with anything. So any legislative agenda that the Republicans had at this point is pretty much dead on arrival.
Well, what would the agenda be? I guess that's what I'm trying to ask, because it seems as though everything, 100% of the oxygen was with this big, beautiful bill, and they passed it. So I guess I'm wondering now what.
I'm honestly not sure what it would be. It might be something about immigration, but I'm really honestly not sure. I mean, if you think back to the last couple of Republican conventions, the Republican agenda has largely shifted. In principle, there might be something on social issues like abortion. Given that Roe v. Wade has been overturned, in principle, there could be national restrictions on abortion. But with a Democratic filibuster that would put a stop to anything like that, there's really no point in proposing legislation on that. They could do it, and it would be a symbolic effort on the Republicans' part, and it would just come to a screeching halt in the Senate. So I'm not really sure what the agenda would be. They can propose budget reconciliation bills a certain number of times when they maintain a majority, and that's really it.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. I want to talk about Mike Johnson, Steve Scalise, two guys that have extremely powerful positions in the U.S. House of Representatives from a relatively small and powerless state. And I want to talk about how that came to be and what they could do from here on in, maybe to help Louisiana or not. I know back in the day with Bennett Johnson and Hale Boggs, we had a lot of stroke and Alan Ellender and these kind of people, and they brought a lot of stuff home in Louisiana. I don't know if that's still the case or not. We're talking to Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Got any questions, comments, 504-260-1870, 620, traffic now, WWL. 624, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Monday, July 7th, back to work. Justin Buechler is our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University, talking about the big bill that was signed over the weekend and what happens from here. I was asking you before, Professor, about Mike Johnson and Steve Scalise from a relatively small and, you know, 8 electoral votes, unimportant state. How did they get to the positions that they have in Congress, and how have they maintained to keep them?
Mike Johnson is really the interesting case there. So if you think back to the sequence of speaker votes, so what happened was that the previous Republican speaker was Kevin McCarthy. And Kevin McCarthy was in a really precarious position because in order to negotiate a speakership vote, he had to agree to a rule where House Republicans could vote to remove him as long as one person in the House Republican Conference called for that vote. And there was a now former member of Congress named Matt Gaetz who got angry at him and called for that vote. So Kevin McCarthy got removed. And then there was the sequence of people who ran for the speakership, and nobody could get a majority. So Jim Jordan tried to get the speaker's gavel, and there were a bunch of others, and nobody could get to a majority. So the Republican conference started cycling through a lot of people, and nobody could get a majority. And eventually they looked around, and they kind of stumbled on Mike Johnson, and a majority was willing to settle on him. So everybody in the conference rallied around and said, okay, because the entire thing was such an embarrassment to the Republican conference that they needed to settle on somebody. And as it turned out, he has managed to keep the Republican conference together more effectively, really, than Kevin McCarthy did for a variety of reasons. But it's really by complete accident that Mike Johnson has found himself in that position based on a prior sequence. And going into this session of Congress, in order to stay in that position, Mike Johnson required a change in the House rules, because according to the previous rule, which is called the motion to vacate, one member of Congress could call for a vote for the motion to vacate and remove the speaker. So Mike Johnson required an increase in that threshold so that there could no longer just be one member of Congress who called for that vote. So that threshold has been increased, and that has made Mike Johnson's position more stable. But it's really by complete accident that Mike Johnson has been in that position. Steve Scalise has been there for a lot longer. He has been more of an establishment figure as kind of a compromise position between the hardline conservatives and somebody who is not as likely to call for complete shutdowns and debt ceiling breaches and things like that. So he's been a little bit more stable, but Johnson's really the interesting case there.
So Mike Johnson kind of maybe stumbled into it, but he really has managed to kind of seize the opportunity, right?
Yeah, I think that's true.
And you mentioned some of the reasons. How did he see, what has he done that's made him successful and able to keep the Republicans together?
Yeah, so I think the big issue is that being Speaker with this particular Republican conference is an extraordinarily difficult job. I don't know if a lot of people appreciate just how difficult the job is, because first of all, the House is very closely divided. He can only afford to lose a couple of votes. And there are a lot of members of that conference who are basically in a kind of a burn it down mode, who would rather just see everything come crashing down than agree to any kind of a negotiation on anything. And it doesn't work that way in the United States of America. We have a complex system, and you can't get everything you want. But there are a bunch of members of that conference who essentially think that they should get everything that they want. They shouldn't have to compromise with anyone. And if they get their way, then one of two things happens. Either they really do stop everything. Everything comes to a screeching halt. Everything comes crashing down. Or somehow they can force Democrats to agree, but that's just not going to happen. So Johnson has managed to get the Republicans to come together, and that it's a really hard job. I did not know if he was going to be able to do it. He has shown more skill than I expected. Let's put it that way.
If 5 years ago I'd have told you, hey, guess what, Justin, Mike Johnson from Louisiana is going to be Speaker of the House, is going to be doing a fair job of it, at least from the Republican standpoint, you'd think I was crazy, wouldn't you?
I would have been surprised.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Justin Buechler, Associate Professor of Political Science at Case Western Reserve University. Talk about the Texas flooding when we come back right now. Time for WWL First News.